The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello and you're very welcome along to The Home Show with me, Sinead Ryan. Coming up today, our Writer's Room series continues and this week it's top crime author Jane Casey. Colour-drenched King of New York Gary Cohen talks vibrant immersion decor. We'll have top florist Brona Hart with alternatives to roses for Valentine's Day. And Jennifer Sheehan will be taking a romantic turn with feminine wallpapers. Anyone remember Laura Ashley? You're very welcome along to the show today. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so on text 53106 for 30 cents, or you can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me over on the social channels, Instagram and X, as SineadRyan100. Now, you're very welcome along today. What a difference a week makes. Lovely weather, blue skies, bit of sunshine where we are anyway, and I hope it is the same for you. And that is notwithstanding the fact that there are still thousands of homes left without power. I hope not water anymore due to Storm Ione. We really have to get to grips with doing these things better, don't we? It is just awful. And I know that ESB are really pushing the boat out. They are doing their best. And I don't know whether it's to do with government policy or whether it is at a more local level. Maybe they had their foot off the wheel over the weeks of the election and getting the Dáil back and all that kind of thing. But really, it is pretty disgraceful. So I hope wherever you are that you are warm, you have power and you are enjoying listening to The Home Show. Now, as part of our occasional Writer's Room series, I'm delighted to be joined by another best-selling author. But for a change, it's from my favourite genre of book and one of my favourite writers of crime fiction. Jane Casey is best known for her long-running series of police procedurals featuring detectives Maeve Kerrigan and Josh Derwent. Originally from Dublin, but living in London, Jane joins me now. Jane, you're very welcome along to The Home Show.
Thank you, Sinead. It's lovely to join you.
Now, was it always crime fiction for you when you began to write?
Always. I think I've always just been drawn to the dark side. And I don't know why that is. But I just find crime fiction is so enjoyable because you have everything going on. You have a puzzle to solve. You have great characters. And it's just so gripping.
Now, tell me where you write, because we've been talking to writers on this series and some of them work from, you know, a desk in their bedroom, the kitchen table. Some have special spaces that are dedicated to the writing. What is it with you?
I think I'm a little bit unusual because I sort of trained myself from the very start not to have a particular place that I had to go to write. So I have always been somebody who will just pick up the laptop and work wherever I am, whether that's a departure lounge or a cafe or a library. I really don't mind where I am as long as I can block out the world around me and just get down to writing.
And that takes a particular kind of focus, I presume, because you have to remember where you are and the bit you're doing. Do you write sequentially, Jane, or do you write in chunks depending on where you are in a story?
No, I tend to write sequentially because I kind of, if you write all the good bits first, there's nothing to look forward to. So I like to just kind of write it in order as it comes in my head, and then maybe I'll rearrange it later. But the only thing that I find is, because I write crime novels, sometimes what I'm writing is like not graphic, but it can be quite extreme. And I have had people kind of look over my shoulder in coffee shops and then move tables.
You have a high body count, as they say in all the best crime novels. When you're at home and you have that time and dedication to write for chunks of time, what are your surroundings? Where are you and what can you see around you?
Well, I'm the sort of person who will move around depending on what else is going on. So we moved house a couple of years ago and we bought a house that had a fantastic writing shed in the garden already. And I think that was why I fell in love with the house, really, was because it had this shed in the garden. But it's a bit cold at this time of year. Mm. And it just is not ideal for sort of several hours of sitting completely still, and the dog doesn't like it. So at this time of year, I'm in the house, generally in the kitchen, generally at the kitchen table. And I will just ride there with everyone coming and going. I have two teenagers, and there can be quite a lot of noise going on. But, you know, sometimes you just have to get that last paragraph written for your day.
Indeed. And now you write about murder, death, violence. Doesn't that jar with your surroundings if you're in a cozy kitchen with your kids?
I don't know, because kids can be very frustrating, and it's a great way of working out your feelings. I just find it all works well for us as a family. Like, my husband is a criminal barrister, so he would tend to come home and talk about his day, and I would talk about my day. And I think our children are just used to us kind of having conversations over their heads about murder and drug dealing and kidnappings and all of that kind of thing.
Does he give you much inspiration for your books with his cases?
He does and he doesn't. He can be quite annoying because he'll tell me, oh, no, that would never happen, which is the one thing a novelist does not want to hear. But he is very good about kind of reading things and telling me how something could work. And he does tell me stories from his day job that, you know, can inspire me to come up with an idea. But it doesn't tend to be as straightforward as, this happened and I'm going to put it in my next book.
Mm. So real life often isn't as exciting as a novel. So do you have to kind of jazz up some of the kind of the boring legal stuff?
I mean, if anything, it's the opposite, because very often what happens in real life, like the kind of stories that people will tell you, are so striking and unbelievable that nobody would think that it was something that could happen. And some of the only times I've had readers query things and say, oh, that wouldn't have happened that way, it is something that I've taken from life. So funnily enough, it is not as sort of easy as saying, if something happens in a book, it's going to be more exciting. Sometimes you're genuinely toning it down.
Right.
But I do kind of skip some of the procedure, because otherwise the books would be 2,000 pages long.
Okay.
And not very interesting.
Now, most writers that I interview are voracious readers. So in your space, in your home, do you have lots and lots of bookshelves, tons of books lined up, or what do you read in your downtime?
I mean, every room in the house, I think, has books in it. We have books everywhere. And I have the shed in the garden. Its main function at this time of year is to be the place that most of the books go and live. It's completely book lined. And I just love reading. I'm so fortunate that I get sent books by other authors to read, so, you know, before they come out. And so I will spend a lot of time reading other people's books and thinking about what they've done and how they've done it.
Indeed. And now you mentioned the shed there that you had, that you were lucky enough to have when you bought the house. Is it one of these gorgeous, kind of glamorous, chaumerous, the she shed with beautiful pastels and book-lined cases, or not?
I mean, if you squint, Sinead, it is. But if you're in there in winter, I can tell you, like, there's frost on the inside of the windows and there's spiders looking at you when you look up from your desk.
Oh, right.
So and sometimes we get foxes running across the roof and things like that. Like, you're kind of out. It's a tiny little suburban garden, but there's a lot of wildlife coming and going around it. So writing there late at night is kind of a nerve-wracking experience, I always find.
That's probably good for the type of books that you write.
It can be, yeah. It can be very inspiring.
Now, is your desk that you write at, when it's not the kitchen table, is it tidy? Is it messy? Do you like stuff around you, or do you like it completely clear?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm one of those people who, like, I call it creative mess. But when I'm writing, everything gets sort of pushed to one side, or, you know, I'll look at a book and then put it down, or, you know, I'll just check something and I'll have notes. And I'll have everything. And I think it makes my husband want to cry, because he's a very orderly person. But in between books, I tidy it up. But when I'm actually writing, it just looks like pure chaos.
Now, I've heard you in interviews say that you're a plan ahead writer. You always have a book in your head, a book on the page, and maybe one after that again. So I'm wondering then, in your writer's room, how do you keep track of all the different plots and characters and ideas?
So I know a lot of writers will have like a board on the wall and they'll write everything up there and kind of they have kind of a visual imagination, and that really works for some people. But for me, I just keep it all in my head. And I know that's not very satisfactory in terms of, like, you could do the same. But for me, it's just easier to keep everything in my head. And I find it very easy to go from one plot to another. I don't really get them confused. And anything that kind of survives in the chaos of my head is going to become a good book, is my feeling. So if it kind of gets lost along the way, maybe it was never worth writing in the first place.
Right. Interesting. So it must be very busy inside your head then, Jane, because you're trying to keep all of this, all the balls in the air, as it were. Talk to me now about the latest book. I know there's one out in April. That's The Secret Room. Is that right?
The Secret Room. Yep. It's the 12th in the Maeve Kerrigan series, which is kind of amazing because I didn't think I would still be writing about Maeve after all this time. And it's such a privilege to get to kind of come back to her again and again and sort of see her develop as a character.
Yes, there's this trade-off relationship. I suppose all detectives in crime novels are kind of slightly tortured. And in Maeve's case, she's displaced. She's a Dubliner living in London, but she's tortured by her partner, by her boss, Josh.
Yes. I mean, he's the kind of character that you start off hating him, I think, and she certainly hates him. And then as time goes on, he reveals more about himself, and I think she comes to understand him a bit better. And he really has a heart of gold, but that doesn't stop him from teasing her constantly. And I think that relationship is really key to the whole, you know, why people come back to the books and why they want to know what's going to happen with the two of them. Because they are kind of a fascinating pair.
Indeed. And was it important for you always to have your heroine, an Irish woman?
Very much so. So I always, like, when I started thinking about writing her, I wanted to write somebody who was a real fish out of water and who wasn't at ease in London and who wasn't at ease in the murder investigation squad that she was on. She was the only woman. She was young, and she's, you know, she still is quite young because I haven't aged her as much as I have aged. I'm keeping her a bit more youthful than me. And she's somebody who has always had to kind of fight to make space for herself and to be heard. She's quite unusual as a crime novel main character to have somebody who's not the most important person in the room.
Mm. Indeed. And that kind of interplay between the two main characters, but also her intelligence, I suppose, comes through as well in all of the books. So A Stranger in the Family, is that out now, Jane?
A Stranger in the Family is out in paperback this month.
Great.
And it's available at the moment, but it'll be coming out in paperback in a couple of weeks.
Fantastic.
It won the Irish Independent Crime Novel of the Year Award at the Irish Book Awards. Which is amazing.
It is amazing. You know,
there are so many brilliant Irish crime writers at the moment. Like, it's such a huge genre now. It's growing and growing. And, you know, to be chosen for that was a massive honour.
Yeah. What do you think it is about? I think you're absolutely right that there are so many Irish crime writers. What do you think it is about the psyche that creates them?
It's fascinating because it didn't happen before. So if you go back even 20 years, there were very, very few women writing crime novels in Ireland. And I think maybe Tana French kicked it all off for everybody else. You know, sometimes when you see someone succeeding, then you realise it's possible.
Mm. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. All right. Well, listen, Jane Casey, it's been a pleasure to talk to you about your writing room. A Stranger in the Family, out in paperback, award winning, and Secret Room is coming in April. You're busy. Are you sticking with Maeve for the next while?
I am writing a standalone, my first book set in Ireland, which will be out in 2026.
Oh, well, we look forward to that indeed. Jane Casey, thank you very much for joining us on The Home Show.
Thanks so much.
Now, one of the massive 2025 trends, because I've been seeing it everywhere, is a concept called colour drenching. Halls, bathrooms, sitting rooms can be completely transformed by the power of paint, but it's not for the faint-hearted. And if you haven't heard of it, I think you might be convinced. Here to tell us more is the New York King of Colour himself.
Elena, what are you?
Gary Cohen of Cohen Design. Gary, you're very welcome back to the studio.
Oh, yes.
Now, I knew you were the right man for this item.
Because,
because this is right up your alley. First of all, tell our listeners what colour drenching is.
Well, first of all, I didn't know it was called colour drenching. I've been doing it for years, and I never knew that was the name. So, anyway, colour drenching is when you immerse a whole room, we're talking ceiling, architraves, doors, everything in the same colour. Yes, the same colour.
Mm.
And that immerses you in the room, and the colour really hugs you. Colour is important, and I know you're going to talk more about that.
Yes. So already I'm thinking there are people listening saying, I am not going to like the look of that. I know instinctively I hate it. I would say to people, go and have a look. Just Google it, colour drenching in rooms, and you'll see what we're talking about. And Gary is going to put up some stuff after the show to show you exactly, because you do this all of the time, as you say.
Yep.
What is it that people love about it?
Well, first of all, let me address the faint of heart. And I get that with all my clients. And it gets to a point where they get scared and they want to do it halfway. I want you to know there's no halfway. You have to go full in, hold your breath, and you will love it.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Because halfway, it's just painting a wall, isn't it?
Yeah, halfway. Or if you don't go with the rich, luxurious colors, you just go, that's just another white room. Who cares? Mm.
Yeah, the art gallery look.
Exactly.
Okay, now, are there particular colours that work best with this? Because, as you say, there's no point doing it in magnolia.
That's right. So there's two extremes to this. First, you go to the deep colours, like the jewel tones. You know, the deep burgundies, emerald green. But they're on the dark side, closer to the black. Also, aubergines are great. Navy blues, really saturated colors. You're going to be very scared. I'm going to let you know you're being scared. Hold on. It's paint. You could always paint it back.
Mm.
Okay, so those are your best colors, Sinead. The other side is going towards the very light neutrals. If you go to a beige, a gray beige, or grayish, you paint everything in the gray in those colors. It just eases the eye. We're not talking a white ceiling. What color is the wall is the color of the ceiling. My clients are used to it now. Yes, Gary, we know the walls are the same color as the ceiling and it looks great.
Okay, now you've brought in some examples here of where people have kind of half done it.
Yes.
Which is the way I'd say most people's houses are, which is that the skirting board, the ceiling, and the architraves are white.
Yes.
And everything else is one block colour.
Yeah.
And you've shown a house here. Actually, when I looked at these two examples, your before and after, I didn't see the words before and after. I thought they were two different examples.
Exactly.
So what are you achieving by painting the ceiling and everything? Your eye is not being drawn to anything in the room, really, in terms of the door.
Well done. It's very theatrical. Think about when you go to the theatre. And all the colors are dark and it goes right to the stage, okay? And then sometimes they paint the whole stage black and you just see the artist or the actor right in the middle. You feel like it's immersed, it's big, it's huge, it's expansive. It takes away the lines in the ceiling, takes away all the edges. You focus on furniture, pieces. The color now is just a feeling. It's just more like, ooh, this is like a background, not an element.
And maybe then you're taking away one of the fears, which is that it might feel closed in and small and dark.
Yeah, so it's the opposite. So when you think about it, you're in a field, midnight, looking up at the stars. What color is the sky, Sinead?
It's very black.
Black, right. Do you ever feel like it's going to fall? No, you feel like, it can go on forever. Same idea.
Okay. So it's kind of fooling the eye.
Here
is not the edge.
Oh, here's another thing. It's forgiving. Any little mistakes or little like imperfections in the ceiling with the dark colors disappear. Nightclubs do it all the time. Ever go to a nightclub? You're like, lights go on the other night. At the end of the night, you're like, oh, wow. I didn't realize this is
grimy with the sticky carpet. And empty champagne bottles that cost far too much money. You're triggering me now, Gary. I'm being brought back to a time in my life that I'm not comfortable with. Okay. Right, let me get back to my room now. To what extent, because the colour is very important, but to what extent does the quality of paint matter? And I'm asking this because the one room I did this with, it was a very high pigment, chalky paint. Is that important?
Yes, it is. So here's a trick. Here's what you need to know about deep colours. Matte colours work the best because they have the lowest reflection of anything on it. So when it's matte, it's absorbing the colors. Like a velvet is matte. That's why velvet curtains are great for a theater. They absorb the color.
So that's what you want. Matte, so no high sheen here, shiny bits at all.
And so it will help you out. Any reflections will not give the same effect.
Okay. Now, in terms of the rooms that benefit the most from it, we don't all have gorgeous Victorian mansions with high ceilings and sash windows and all that. So I know you have brought in some examples of an attic room, and these would be ones that we'd be very familiar with.
These
with
are the best.
Sloping roofs, either fully sloping or a cap on the top.
Yes.
Now, you've done a kind of a do and a don't there. Mm-hmm. What's the difference?
So when you do the typical, I paint all the walls that are vertical or horizontal, vertical, up and down, okay, one color, and all the slopes, like the roof slopes, you usually paint them white. What that does is your subconscious says the ceiling height is at my waist and I'm a giant in the room.
Oh, yeah.
And so your scale is off and it always feels itty bitty and like everything. By painting the whole room one color, you took away all the lines of scale and now everything feels correct. And it's hugging you.
Okay. And actually, it does make such a massive difference because these attics you've shown me, these are proper bedrooms now.
They're
in
really
attics.
Beautiful, yes.
The second set look much bigger.
Yeah.
Well, they look like proper rooms, really. And that's the trick, because that's the only difference.
These lines all over the place.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. Now, in terms then of, the type of house we have, a lot of houses we have, they've kind of, even newer houses have some level of maybe a ceiling rose or little architrave around. Is it ever worthwhile putting that up in order to paint over it?
Yes. Because what they do is they create interest and shadows, okay? So I just want you to be very clear. Painting an architrave white is a style, and you can respect that style if you want it. But then I love when I paint everything, the architrave, the cornice, the architraves, the skirting, all one color, okay? Even the ceiling. And all you catch is the light hitting everything in a nice shadows. And that when you put your furniture in front of it, they sort of float and the background disappears. When you paint the architraves all in white, it's like taking a pencil and outlining everything. And now you've created another style where that's breaking things up in proportions that you may not want.
Yeah, it takes a leap of faith though, doesn't it?
It doesn't. I say this, how you laugh.
I say this to
all my clients. I said, look, it's paint. And then and I always get the threat, oh, well, you're going to paint it afterwards. So what they do is they let me paint it. I get the call every time, oh, Gary, you cannot imagine how I love this room. You know what? Try one room. Try a small room. And, you don't have to do the big room yet. Just try a small room, paint everything one color, and you'll be just like, wow, this is amazing. If you're scared, go on Pinterest, look at what other people have done, choose a color that you feel you like that other people have done, and use that. And remember, this is not, you're on the diving board. You can't just like put your big toe in the water. You got to dive in, okay? And then when you're done, oh my God, you will be so happy.
Okay, I trust you. I trust you. It's a fabulous idea. I love the colours. I love the look of it. It's a look I've always loved, actually. But it's only become really on trend in the last couple of years.
You're absolutely right.
The biggest change, is it true, or you can agree with me or not, is when you paint a door, an interior door, with the architrave around it and the skirts.
That's right.
Like, your eye just simply doesn't see it anymore. It's looking instead at your art, at your carpet, at your sofa, at the things you want people to look at.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let me help you out a little bit, okay? Think about when you're going to a gala and you're wearing a simple, let's say it's a black dress, okay?
Much better than the nightclub. Go on. I mean, I'm there. I'm
still
there.
Still get to the end of the night, so. But anyway, you're immersed in this beautiful black, let's say it's an aubergine, beautiful aubergine dress, and it's just flowing, okay? But you're not putting all these lines and patterns all over. People, when they see you, they're like, I love your dress. You look amazing. You look taller. You look this, blah, blah, blah. It's all this is going on. You're just doing that to a room.
Okay, right. You have me sold. You have me sold. Right, Gary Cohen, listen, you're amazing. Now, just in case I was very bad at describing stuff there, you are going to pop that up where so that listeners can have a look?
It'll be on my blog, right on my website. So you go to Cohn, C-O-H-N, design.com. Go in there. You'll see where the blog is. You just go there. So go to ConeDesign.com. I'll put the images and you'll see exactly what I was talking to Sinead about.
Gary Cohen of Cohen Design, thank you so much for your enthusiasm, your ideas, as always.
Oh, you're good.
There'll be colour drenching going on all over the country.
All right. Thank you.
That was Gary Cohen of Cohen Design. And now it's technically spring, as I said at the beginning, 1st of February. That's my season turning date. And with Valentine's almost around the corner, what better time to talk flowers. I am delighted to be joined again by Brona Hart, owner of Ginkgo Flowers in Bagot Street. And she has not come empty-handed. We are looking at a profusion of colour. Brona, you're very welcome to the Home Show.
Thanks for having me back.
Now, look, I know Valentine's Day, very busy time of year for you.
Very, yes. Yeah, the single busiest day of the whole year.
Really?
Yeah.
More than Mother's Day?
Yeah. Five times as much as
right, right. Yeah. All those lovers out there, listen to me. The whole roses thing. I'm not a massive fan, and I know they're super traditional, and that's what people go for. What is the thing with? Is it still the most popular flower this time of year?
It probably is the most popular, but it is changing a little bit. The guys have cottoned on to the fact that it's not necessarily their wife or partner's favourite flower. So they are changing it up a little bit. We sell an awful lot of tulips. Tulips are really, really big sellers. We have a bouquet called Walk on the Wild Side that has no roses in it. It's really popular at Valentine's Day.
Because the thing about roses is they just don't last that long. And they kind of get weepy very quickly. So the outer petals fall off and they just look a little bit dreary. And of course you see roses on kind of funeral bouquets and things like that. I'm just not a huge fan of them. Yeah. So tulips, and a perfect spring flower, of course.
Absolutely. Made for the season. So they're really, really very much in season. And they come in such a variety of colours as well. And they just bring sunshine into a house when they go in. Mm. So really, tulips are incredibly popular at this time of the year.
Now, what else have you brought us in here that people can use in a bouquet? I was saying to you when you were putting these down, I could smell the eucalyptus. And it's just such a beautiful leaf, isn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful. A lot of people are going for greenery bunches, just bunches of different textured foliages as well, which look really elegant in vases. If someone's not interested in flowers, that's another alternative for Valentine's. Forget the roses totally and just go for
foliage.
Greenery, and it looks beautiful in a vase. It looks really elegant.
Okay, okay. So well, you've brought lots of it here.
A few different types of eucalyptus. This is from Wexford and Wicklow, so not too far away. We've beautiful mimosa. It's a gorgeous spring flower. We've solidagos. We've some spray roses, agapanthus, asclepias, lisianthus. Like really, there's so many other options. If you do not like roses, you don't have to be stuck. It's no excuse to come home empty-handed.
But isn't the trick how to get that message across? Because you don't want to assume you're getting a bouquet of flowers.
No, that's true.
All right. So trying to find something in season, of course, is absolutely key. Yeah. And at this time of the year, look, we know that there's going to be a lot of forced growing and you're probably importing quite a lot of stuff because look what's growing in February.
We have an Irish supplier, but at the moment we're struggling with the weather as well. And the snow a couple of weeks ago set things back. So technically we're only getting Alstroemeria from Ireland at the moment, and loads of foliage. We're very good for foliage producing. But when the weather starts heating up, we'll be getting a lot more lilies and freesias and ranunculus and things like that. But for now, unfortunately, we're very limited with what we're growing. So it is imported.
Sure. Now, in terms of colour then, you've brought in, there's pinks and purples and oranges and yellows and everything. What would you recommend for a spring bouquet? Because I mean, look, flowers are beautiful and everything goes with everything, really.
Yep.
But if you want to display it beautifully and you buy maybe a couple of bunches of flowers, how is it best to put that together?
Well, if you're going to make it yourself, I would suggest go for one colour flower, but maybe different tones of that. So if someone likes pink, go for a hot pink and a cooler pink or a baby pink and put them together, and you're not going to go too far wrong. Whereas if you're not sure about mixing colours, that's probably the easiest way to get something nice and create something yourself. Mm. But if you trust your florist, florists love to hear the words, give me what you would like.
Okay.
You know, and it won't be a red rose. No doubt on Valentine's Day, you will not be leaving the shop with a red rose. But it's always really nice for a florist to get a free hand and to make something out of, because they know every single flower in the shop at that time, and they can make something really special. If someone just trusts their florist to give them something wow, you will walk out with something wow.
They're the
that
experts.
Will be,
Now, tempting as it is to keep it in the bouquet, sometimes it's in a box or in a bag within a box or just in cellophane. But when you're taking it out, I love, when I'm lucky enough to get a bouquet of flowers, I love to try and split it among two or three vases if I can, rather than dump it all in one.
You must be receiving really big bouquets.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm kind of like
lucky
that's,
lady.
That's a hint as much as anything else. But I do, even if it just means there's three or four kind of sprigs and I add bits from the garden to it, you know, because I like to, you know,
get them all out of it. Absolutely.
It all banged in one. Is there a special way, because my mother always told me to cut on the diagonal on all the stems. Is that still good advice?
It is. Like, technically, when we cut our bouquet to leave the shop, they're all cut flat at the bottom because they do have to stand when they're leaving. But it is best to refresh the stem cuts every couple of days, and that gets the best out of the flowers. So a diagonal cut is the best because it gives it the best surface area to drink water. So definitely, go with the angular cut if you're able to do it. Definitely do it on an angle.
Okay. And what is the thing about cold water? Or is that just a kind of a fad? There was a kind of a TikTok thing where, you know, it was don't put it in cold water, put it in slightly warmed water. Does that make a difference?
Yeah, we wouldn't, to be honest, in the shop, we wouldn't. Now, we wouldn't put it in ice cold water, but we wouldn't put it in warm water unless we want them to open up faster. That's a way of making flowers open up faster. So we try not to do that.
Okay.
Generally, if you want the bud to burst a little bit quicker, or if we needed roses for, say, a wedding bouquet and they had to be open, then we would put them in slightly warmer water to do that. But generally in a house, I would keep it in cool water. That would be the best.
Because they last a bit longer.
They last for longer. You want them tighter. You want it to last for longer in your vase.
Okay. So if there's, for all our kind of our men listening, and listen, there's nothing stopping the ladies buying flowers for their...
There's plenty of those.
Are there?
Plenty of those.
Are there?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So for anybody listening, what would you recommend now if somebody came into you and said, look, I want a gorgeous Valentine's bouquet for this person I adore. What would you be putting in it?
For me, I would like, we have one with all the hot colours called I Predict a Riot. So,
oh dear, not a very romantic message.
It has got the strong oranges and yellows, electric blues, lime greens, Cabri kind of purple. So it's all the stronger tones, but that's not for everyone. So you kind of do have to find out what your partner, what colour scheme they like. If you turn up with red roses and someone prefers white, you're not going to get too many brownie points. So it's good to kind of put the feelers out. You've got a few days. You can put the feelers out and see what tones of flowers they like most, and then trust the florist. Say,
okay,
I want something in all white. What can you get?
Right. You know? And speaking of all white, I know there are people out there who have a visceral view on lilies.
Yes.
You know, it's a kind of a Marmite thing, isn't it? You love them or you hate them.
Yeah, I unfortunately I do have that. I don't like them. We do sell them. They're just not my cup of tea. I don't want them in my house because I don't like the smell of them.
Mm.
But people love them. Absolutely. It's the exact Marmite of the flower industry.
Okay.
It really is.
Okay, all right.
We don't put them into our bouquets unless someone wants them. So we do have lilies at all times. But
I suppose people like the drama of them
and
the wideness of them. Yeah,
they're really long lasters. They do have a scent, just not for my cup of tea. Yeah. But, you know, they do have a scent as well.
Right. Okay. So beautiful colour. And I love these Easter colours. This, the yellow and purple is very kind of Easter.
Absolutely.
Looking, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And Mother's Day is down the road as well. So we'll be doing an awful lot more pinks. You know, the season does change as well, and the requests change. So there'll be a lot more pastels kind of later on in the spring.
Wonderful. All right. Well, Brona Hart of Ginkgo Flowers, where can people find out more about your bouquets,
yeah,
Brona?
You can order on the website or you can pop into us in the shop on Bagot Street in Dublin 4. Wonderful. So we're always there.
That's fantastic. And thank you so much for bringing in such a vibrant display. They're absolutely gorgeous.
No problem. No problem. Anytime.
That was Brona Hart of Ginkgo Flowers. We'll leave it there now. Now, we are staying a little bit with our Valentine's theme. There's still plenty of time for all the men listening. And when it comes to interiors, nothing says romantic more than gentle florals. Here to tell us more is former Home of the Year winner, Jenny Sheehan. Jennifer, you like them? You like the florals?
I do like florals. I wouldn't be a big Valentine's girl. Mm. I don't love it. My boyfriend's listening. He's going to be delighted to hear that.
Cheap date. Huh?
I mean, I do. I like expensive presents. But I like florals. My whole issue or worry with the whole romantic style, romantic theme, while it can be beautiful, is it's very, there's a line, isn't there? And it's a difficult balance to strike between well-considered florals and nice little frills and accessories.
An English country garden.
An English country garden. Yeah. And saccharine and just annoying. Mm.
There was a time, there was a moment, not a moment, a trend long into the 80s and 90s of Laura Ashley. And actually they had a shop in Dublin and everything seemed to be florals on top of florals. So the wallpaper, the bed linen, the lampshade, everything matched.
Yeah.
And it was insanely popular for a long, long time.
Now, it actually is still around. So for those listening who used to love Laura Ashley, Next have taken over the brand. So okay, you can find Laura Ashley stuff on Next. I think it can look really good. I mean, if you walked into a Laura, and I had some Laura Ashley stuff. I remember when I was younger, I had a floral blanket and then I had this throw that went over it that had crystal beads all around the end
See,
of it.
That's where it
I will
started.
Admit I went too far. I, you know, there was a few practice runs before I landed in my current
From
house.
There to a glitter ball in your loo. Now we know it. Now we
just
know
love
it.
Glitter. But I think it's all well and good when you have a stylist putting it together for a shop display and they know how to mix and match and they know how to get the colours right. It's a difficult one to pick up and put together in your own home. And I admire anyone who's done it with success, but it's a tough line to walk.
So what are the brands we should be looking at then if we want to give it a go and have just that gentle vibe without like little old lady vibe, you know, or that Victorian clutter kind of thing?
Yeah. So I do actually have some florals in my own home and where I got them, and I love this brand so much, is Foxford. Now, I wouldn't describe them overall as romantic style, but they just have some of the most stunning floral patterns. And what I love about them is their duvets. They usually have a reverse pattern on their duvet. Mm. So you might have florals on one side, stripes on the other. And when the duvet's folded down, you get that lovely mix and match without having to put in too much effort.
Lovely.
They sell matching pillows or, you know, pillows that go with a set. I think they're fab. It's a great place to start.
So if you go with florals on a bed, which is fine because if you don't like it, you can change it. Does that mean the rest of the room then you'd be better off keeping it super plain?
So what I would say with mixing and matching is go mix large with little. So if you have a large floral pattern, say on a wallpaper or on a bed throw, or maybe it's even your, you know, your sofa cover, you're really leaning into the florals. If it's a big print, just large in size, then match it with something small. A really, really small repeating print will look a lot better with it. It's a really confusing for the eye if you put the same size print in lots of different shapes, you know, lots of different sizes all over the place. It's too much. So put little against large and then remember contrast. So if you have a lovely floral pattern that you love and you want it to stand out and you want people to see it, if you put too much with it, it's going to just be drowned. So you'd be surprised how little you need to go a long way. A little goes a long way with florals. So a neutral background, neutral walls, neutral carpet, neutral whatever it might be, will really make the florals that you do have pop and stand out. And okay, that's true for all patterns.
Okay, good call, good call. And then when you're trying to match it, I suppose if you're putting anything directly on the florals, and I'm thinking here of a bed or, you know, maybe a floral wallpaper and you have a sofa, is it best then to kind of layer it with just a kind of a tone it down a little bit or pick one of the colours and have a play?
Totally, totally. Like if you think of it like cushions, you know, because romantic style it's actually really all about being cozy and really, you know, warm and wrapped in a lovely warm blanket and fire on and weekend free, whatever it might be. So if you think about lots of pillows on a bed, a mix and match of some plain pillows, some with a little fringe on them, some with a floral pattern on them, maybe one or two with just a stripe pattern, you know, a very, very kind of plain and simple pattern. The mix and match of all of that looks really, really good because they stand out against each other. They set each other off.
Okay. And when you're talking there about fringes, you know, your fringes and tassels, that is, that kind of harks very back to the time when the florals were all in, you know, that whole end of Victorian, the beginning of Edwardian period, the arts and crafts movement. And of course, you can even go further back than that to the kind of the Bridgerton type
era. I was dying for you to bring up Bridgerton because that is the epitome of it, isn't it? It's so fun and romantic and it's so beautifully done. And
yeah,
it's a lot. You know, we probably, most of us don't want to necessarily live in the Bridgerton manner, but
no, I'd love to visit it. What strikes it, you know, when you're looking at that romantic kind of a look, isn't it really the pastels that bring that together?
Yeah. And I think that's where you can really tread the line between going too far, going too saccharine, and keeping it really sophisticated and lovely and gentle, is making sure that the tones are really muted. You know, if it's a pastel, it's not too bright. If it's a pink, it's a really dusty pink. The neutrals, again, can really help to set it off. Not a white, but a lovely kind of linen breeze colour or an elephant's breath or whatever it might be. But very, very muted colours.
Okay,
great. And metallics. They really set off.
Oh,
like, again,
okay,
if you think about the Bridgerton set as like our epitome of beautiful romantic style, think about the big gilded mirrors and the chandeliers and the, you know, the side tables with the gold leaf, beautiful curved legs, all that kind of stuff.
And it does look beautiful with that. Mm. So now we're talking about accessories.
Yeah.
It's hard to get past chandeliers and sconces and all that kind of thing. But for a regular living room, what are your recommendations?
So, do you know what? We're talking a lot about flowers. Flowers. Floral patterns are great, but flowers. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Are fab. Now, listen, anyone who's ever heard me talk before knows that I will kill any green thing or flower that comes into my house. Antiques, if you're into antiques, layering in antiques as you find them is brilliant because that slightly weathered, worn patina, maybe even a little bit chipped, all that look, that looks fantastic. Details like wall paneling is really, really nice. I mean, that's anything that's ornate and just adds a little onto it.
Yeah.
It's hard, again, to mix and match.
And actually, there's a kind of a fun thing you can do if you have a wall panel or create one with just the little beading you
so
can get in Woody's or B&Q, stick it up in the wall and maybe put the floral wallpaper in that, in the insert.
So it almost becomes a frame. I think that can look really, really, really good. And then mirrors are another one. So I said metallics, accessories, and mirrors kind of falls into that bracket. But you know, that antique, now I don't like a fake antique mirror, but trawl the antique stores. They're not that expensive for an actual antique mirror. It looks amazing. Or a smoked effect that looks absolutely stunning. And everybody's reflection looks gorgeous in it, so it's very romantic.
Okay. And finally, what's your favourite flower?
I love gerber daisies.
Oh, yes.
They're really colourful. I don't know what I call them, romantic. They're also very cheap. They're like €2 in Tesco, I think you could pick them up for. But they're so colourful. They're so cheerful. I absolutely love them.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, I know you're not a fan of Valentine's Day, but you've given us some lovely ideas there for permanent florals and that gentle aesthetic if people want to incorporate it in their home. I think it's a lovely idea, as long as too much isn't too much.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you love it, go too far. I'm not here to judge you, but it wouldn't be for me.
Jenny Sheehan, thanks very much for joining us once again on The Home Show. And you can find all of Jenny's ideas and her doings and everything that's going on with her and her little dog, Perry, up on @workerscottage on Instagram. And that's it for this week's episode of The Home Show podcast. I hope you enjoyed our range of guests from murder and mayhem into florals. And if you'd like to get in touch with us or like to submit any ideas or topics you'd like us to cover on the pod, well, we are here for you. You can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me over on social channels at Sinead Ryan 100, I think. And I look forward to seeing you there. Thank you to producer Aoife Breen. Stephen McLoon was on sound. And we will do it all again next week for The Home Show Pod.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan. Saturday morning at 8 on News Talk.